Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland's homeless, more isolated than ever. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E, at MRT.com. The homeless face a higher risk than the general public of contracting coronavirus and suffering serious complications from it, have less access to masks and hygiene products, and in many cases don't have phones to call for help or cars to drive themselves to the hospital. But Midland nonprofits say they've received little guidance from hospital officials and city leaders on the protocol if they suspect someone living on the streets is infected with COVID-19. "I really wouldn't know what to do," said John Mark Eccles, founder of The Field's Edge. Eccles provides resources to those on the streets and is planning to break ground later this year on a tiny home village for the homeless. Over the last month, he's delivered bottles of hand sanitizer and face masks to Midlanders living on the streets and set up portable toilets with hand wash stations in an effort to curtail any potential spread of the virus among this vulnerable population. Individuals who are homeless are high risk because many are elderly and most have underlying health conditions, according to the CDC. Eccles said he's been in contact with officials from Midland Memorial Hospital and the city, but hasn't been given a clear protocol to follow if he encounters someone he believes might be infected. "The protocol that we've seen from our hospital emergency management is to call 68Nurse, and if our folks don't have a phone, they can't do that. And then from there, they might be instructed to go to the drive-through testing center, and if they don't have a car, they can't do that." Nobody really knows what to do. The Field Edge doesn't have the ability to transport someone to the emergency room, to the hospital's drive-through testing location, without risking exposing themselves, he said. Captain Jeremy Walker with Salvation Army of Midland said hospital officials have instructed them to call 68Nurse if someone staying at their homeless shelter has symptoms of the virus. If a nurse believes someone needs to receive treatment, they would be transported to the hospital in an ambulance. He said he hasn't been given instructions for assisting those who might be seen in their dining room who are living on the streets. In a statement to the Reporter-Telegram, an MMH representative said Midland Health's protocol for testing COVID-19 is the same for all patients, regardless of personal housing circumstance. If the screening guidelines are met, they will be tested for COVID-19. If hospitalization is needed due to COVID-19, the patient would be admitted and proper medical care would be administered. The CDC has issued several guidelines for individuals experiencing homelessness, including testing for those with symptoms of the virus. The burden is on the local health care providers to coordinate with homeless health care clinics and street medicine clinics to determine a testing location. Some of the CDC guidelines don't factor in obstacles associated with homelessness. They recommend those with symptoms contact case managers or other service providers, but don't provide guidance for those who don't have phones or a device with internet access. The CDC also recommends homeless individuals wash their hands for at least 20 seconds whenever possible, although with most businesses and restaurants closed, many don't have a place to do that. Eccles said that was his motivation for installing two portable toilets with hand wash stations in areas where the homeless congregate. He placed one at the downtown bus terminal and one outside the Breaking Bread soup kitchen. He wants to place another near the outside Walmart, where many homeless individuals live in tents, but hasn't found a business that will allow it. He's also continued to provide masks, procuring 1,000 disposable paper masks and 100 cloth masks in partnership with Forever Shepherd. Walker said the Salvation Army's shelter is taking as many precautions as possible to prevent an outbreak among the individuals staying there. Clients that are sleeping in our shelter are sleeping head to toe in beds, a safe distance apart, and we're just sanitizing as much as we possibly can. They've also changed the procedures in their dining room, where they serve 3 meals a day, 7 days a week. He said they've reduced the number of people who can sit at each table from 8 to 4, switched to paper products for serving food, and wiped down the area after every meal. Walker said they've seen an uptick in the number of patrons staying in the shelter, as many oil companies lay off workers in response to oil prices crashing. The shelter has nearly reached its capacity of 70 people. Echols said he's been driving the Breaking Bread mobile food truck for the last few weeks and has encountered at least 10 individuals who became newly homeless after the recent economic decline. He said two homeless individuals he works with through the Field's Edge have lost work, one a full-time job and the other a day laborer who can't find work. Tom Miller, director of Family Promise of Midland, said 5 out of 10 families they work with have members who have lost their jobs since the coronavirus pandemic began. When you're homeless, trying to make ends meet and living from paycheck to paycheck, becoming unemployed is a devastating blow. Miller said the number of families contacting Family Promise has decreased since the Texas Supreme Court halted eviction proceedings through April. He's expecting a tremendous rise in families needing help after that order expires. The sheltering of all restaurant dining rooms has left many who are homeless without access to food, Echols said. Many who would normally go to fast food locations for meals aren't able to because establishments switch to drive-through only. Most nonprofits that provide food have also switched to drive-through only and closed completely. The Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry closed its dining room 2 weeks ago after volunteers quit over coronavirus concerns. The Field's Edge moved 4 individuals from the streets into RVs before the coronavirus crisis began, and they typically have weekly dinners with Echols and his family. Echols said with social distancing guidelines in place, he hasn't been able to see those individuals since the pandemic started. It's been hard, and a lot of them, they don't have internet, or they're not super tech savvy. So doing Zoom calls with them hasn't been an option. It's quite a challenge to kind of keep those relationships going and strong and make sure that they all have the love and care that they need to thrive. Echols said the shuttering of places such as soup kitchens and food banks also results in homeless individuals experiencing even less community than they do normally, as many don't have outside relationships. They're more isolated than ever, he said.
Obituaries. Bertha Wright. Bertha May Wright, Blankenship, 84, of Midland, Texas, went to be with her Heavenly Father on 6 April 2020. There will be no services or visitation due to health concerns for everyone. Bertha was born in Knox County, Texas, on 1 May 1935 to Porter and Ina May Blankenship. She grew up on a farm in Gorey, Texas, and graduated from Gorey High School, where she was on the volleyball team. On 5 May 1953, she married her husband, Wesley Wright, in Wynert, Texas. They actually got married there because her father did not want her to marry him, so they ran away to get married and kept it a secret until she graduated at the end of May. Bertha was happily married for 62 years until her husband's death in June 2015. She had three children, Mark, Sharon, and Margie. She was happy being a homemaker and loved to work in her flower beds of Gerbera daisies and lantanas. She also loved to crochet blankets for all her family and crochet doll dresses. She also played hymns on her piano. Bertha is survived by her children, Mark Wright, Gina, Margie Appleton, Mickey, grandchildren, Randy Wright, Whitney, Rachel Whitney, Justin, Mary Ann Diaz, Carolyn Clark, Ron, Mandy Calloway, Wes, Missy Bailey, Landon, and Wesley Appleton. Great-grandchildren, Taylor, Ethan, Hayden, Braden, Mackenzie, Aiden, and Hudson. Bertha was preceded in death by her parents, her brothers, Bobby and Doris Blankenship, her husband, Wesley Wright, and her daughter, Sharon McWilliams. We express our everlasting gratitude to the people of Cimarron House in Midland, Texas, for all of their excellent and loving care of our mother for the last 4 years of her life. They became like family to us and always went above and beyond to make her happy and comfortable. We also want to express our gratitude to Hospice of Midland for the last 2 weeks of her life before she went to her home in heaven. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Georgia Barley Reed. Georgia Barley Reed, 74, of Midland, Texas, passed away from natural causes on Thursday, April 9, surrounded by her extensive family. A private funeral will be limited to immediate family on Tuesday, April 14, 2020, at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Live stream for the graveside service may be accessed at www.npwelch.com. A memorial service will be scheduled at a later date due to current gathering restrictions. Georgia was born on September 10, 1945, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, to Lutheran parents Clarence Barley and Corinne Dean Barley. As a precocious sixth grader, Georgia researched the Catholic faith and decided to convert to Catholicism with the blessing of her parents. Later, while attending the University of Arizona, Georgia met the love of her life, A. Joseph Joe Reed. 1 week into their differential equations class, Joe asked Georgia on a date. During their first date, Georgia noticed Joe's Catholic high school ring and inquired about his faith. Following their conversation, they became inseparable study partners who spent many nights in the campus library. In 1967, she graduated cum laude with a B.S. in psychology and minors in math and German. On June 11, 1966, Georgia married Joe Reed. She worked as a bookkeeper and accountant for Reed & Associates, Incorporated, which later merged with Arcadis U.S., Incorporated. As a working wife and mother, she found time to raise seven children, to attend church regularly, to volunteer for various functions and activities, and to travel with her family throughout the United States and Canada with camping equipment in tow. She was a past member of the St. Anne's Preschool Mothers Club and Altar Society. She was also a past booth co-chairman for the St. Anne's Family Fair. Georgia assisted Joe in initiating and organizing fundraising activities for Steve Ray's 10-film DVD series Footprints of God, The Story of Salvation, published by Ignatius Press. She also served in the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts organizations as a Brownie Scout leader, a Girl Scout leader, and a Cub Scout den mother. Other memberships included the Midland JCETs, the Midland Women's Club, the American Association of University Women, and the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem. She served as the clerk of course chairman during City of Midland swim meets and chaperoned for the Midland Lee High School band during annual band trips, including trips to Ronald Reagan's and George H.W. Bush's presidential inaugurations. In addition to her numerous roles and responsibilities, Georgia was an avid sports fan. Whether tuning in to IndyCar races, horse races, or local collegiate or professional sports, she followed her favorite teams closely via television or radio and often tracked multiple events at once, especially if her beloved Arizona Wildcats were accessible or during baseball season when the New York Yankees and Chicago Cubs were playing. Friday nights were reserved for Midland Lee football games, while Saturdays often found the family making the long trek to College Station for Texas A&M football games, swim meets, and softball games. After church on Sundays, the family would serve brunch, put aside homework, turn off the lights, and watch football games for the remainder of the day, especially when the Dallas Cowboys were playing. During March Madness, Georgia would distribute brackets to family members in an effort to foster friendly competition. When not listening to or watching sports, she would play cards and board games with her kids. Her favorite was Trivial Pursuit, where she could show off her eclectic knowledge of history, literature, entertainment, science, and sports. Georgia's passion for games and her competitive nature was indelibly passed on to her children and grandchildren. As a mother and grandmother, Georgia attended numerous swim meets, piano and dance recitals, band competitions, football, baseball, and softball games, soccer matches, golf tournaments, christenings, and other sacraments, and military promotions. There was never an activity or milestone too trivial nor a distance too far to travel in order to support her family. To her, the family was the nucleus and the pinnacle of life. Georgia, the matriarch of the family, is survived by her loving husband of 53 years, Joe Reed, and their 7 children, Caroline Reed Gerhardt, Stewart, Alan Joseph Reed Jr., Jill Campbell, Stephanie Reed Seitz, David, Melanie Teresa Campo, Stephen, LTC Nathan Thomas Reed, Rachel Rache, Natalie Patricia Martinez, Raymond, and Susanna Reed Jackson, Thomas. She is also survived by her 21 grandchildren, Reed Gerhardt, Kayla Gerhardt, Rebecca Reed, Sarah Reed, Catherine Seitz, Jennifer Seitz, Elizabeth Seitz, David Tommy Seitz IV, Stephen Timmy Seitz, Stephen Stevie Campo, Braden Campo, Caitlin Reed, Megan Reed, Evan Reed, Raymond Martinez II, Joseph Martinez, Teresa Martinez, Thomas Trey Jackson III, Tyler Jackson, Emma Jackson, and Ellis Jackson. She is preceded in death by her parents, Clarence and Corrine Barley. The family would like to express their gratitude toward the nursing and support staff of Midland Memorial Hospital, the therapy, nursing, and support staff of Encompass Health, and the nurses and aides of Hospice of Midland. We would also like to express our gratitude toward Dr. Asif Ansari, Dr. James Barnett, Dr. Paul Best, Dr. Varsha Gilala, Dr. Pramila Johnson, and Edward Maurice Lopez, FNP. Without them and the loving support of her husband, who cared for her during a lengthy illness, the time we have cherished with our beloved mother and grandmother over the past decade would not have been possible. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, 1140 West Jackson Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. Food for the Poor, 6401 Lyons Road, Coconut Creek, Florida, 33073, St. Joseph's Indian School, P.O. Box 326, Chamberlain, South Dakota, 57326, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. James Jim Panuska. James Jim Roy Panuska, 70, of Hendersonville, North Carolina, passed away at his home on Monday, April 6, 2020, after a three-year struggle with cancer. He was born in Rapid City, South Dakota, the eldest son to the late George and Genevieve Panuska. Jim graduated from Texas Christian University in 1970, go Horned Frogs, and went on to earn an M.D. and Ph.D. in biochemistry from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. It was in Cleveland that he met his future wife, Ann Hart, a nurse and Akron native. Through mutual friends Mary Ann LeGuire and Vladimir Swierczowski. They married in 1977, had two daughters, and moved the family to Houston, Texas, to finish Jim's internship and residency in internal medicine at Baylor Medical Center, where he served as chief resident. From there, it was another move to St. Louis to complete a fellowship in allergy, asthma, and immunology at Washington University, before finally joining the faculty at CWRU, teaching and running a research lab specializing in treatment of respiratory syncytial virus. Jim loved the complexity of research and the relationships made with students and colleagues, and formed especially close lifelong friendships with Drs. Fabio Medulla, Alberto Villani, and Rocco Merola, who came from the University of Rome to work alongside Jim and learned from the research in his lab. The years in Cleveland as a young family were happy ones, with close friends and extended family nearby, the welcoming of a son, and years of rooting for the Indians and Cavs. In 1997, Jim left academics and joined a private allergy and asthma practice in Midland, Texas. Although he missed his research, he loved his patients and was often gifted with venison, quail, and dirty jokes from their visits. Jim quickly adapted to life as a West Texan, taking his son hunting, getting a pickup truck, and trading in fishing poles for golf clubs with good friends Dr. Steve Hankinson and Dave Power. Jim's passion for cooking and gardening came from working alongside his mother both in the garden and the kitchen, and was especially influenced by her Epicurean tastes and traditional Scandinavian dishes. As a boy, he was introduced to his other passion, fishing, by his Uncle Roy, and honed that skill in the lakes and rivers of South Dakota with his lifelong friend, Jim Stordahl, the waters of the Caribbean, as his family moved to St. John in the Virgin Islands, and then throughout adulthood in fishing expeditions around the country. Retiring in 2013, he and Ann moved to Hendersonville, North Carolina. Realizing quickly that he and Ann couldn't share a yard for vegetables, he bought a small property nearby with good sunshine and lots of room to grow tomatoes. Little did he know at the time that this was the beginning of his much-loved Willow Oak Farm. Beekeeping, growing fava beans, building birdhouses, and driving the tractor filled his days. Throughout his life, Jim discovered and explored things deeply, every few years diving headlong into another interest. Along the way, he found and cultivated strong friendships. Above all, he loved and cherished his family deeply and held his time with them dear. Jim will be terribly missed by his wife of 43 years, Anne, two daughters, Genevieve and husband Scott Harper, Catherine and husband John Lentz, one son, Matthew Panuska, his much-loved grandchildren, Avery Harper and Francis and Juniper Lentz, two sisters, Jeanette Nessler and Jill Clement, and one brother, Jay Panuska. When traveling is once again permitted, his family will gather at the farmhouse to celebrate his life. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations in memory of Jim can be made to National Public Radio, www.npr.org, or Hope and Heroes, www.hopeandheroes.org, or Clean Energy Innovation, www.letfund.org. An online register book is available for family and friends by visiting www.thosshepherd.com. THOS, Shepherd and Son Funeral Directors and Memorial Cremation Service, are in charge of arrangements. Jean Ann Widmayer. Kenai resident Jean Ann Widmayer, 83, passed on to be with Jesus in her own bed after fighting illness for years on January 28, 2020. Services are yet to be determined. Jean Ann was born June 21, 1936, to Nina Jean and Edgar Elijah Watts in Midland, Texas. She grew up in Midland and married Noel Widmayer on February 28, 1959. He joined the Air Force and became a pilot in the Air Force. During their military time, Jean Ann and the boys followed Noel to air bases in Texas, California, Germany, and New Mexico. In 1971, the family moved to Alaska, where they lived in Anchorage, King Salmon, and Kenai. While in King Salmon, Jean Ann worked at several jobs. She was a staff member at the King Salmon Air Base Exchange. She cleaned apartments for the FAA and did several summers in commercial beach fishing with a good friend. After moving to Kenai, Jean Ann and Noel retired in a home that they had built for their retirement. Jean Ann enjoyed reading, crafts, and cooking. She was also a member of the Kenai Christian Church. She leaves behind her husband, Noel A. Widmayer, sons Kent Widmayer of Fairbanks, Alaska, and Kurt A. Widmayer of Loveland, Colorado, and a sister, Shirley Brown of Edmond, Oklahoma. Jean was preceded in passing by a sister, Sharon Caruso. Arrangements were handled by Peninsula Memorial Chapel in Kenai. Karen Ivy. Karen Ivy of Midland, Texas, passed away in her home on Saturday, March 28, 2020. Karen is peacefully with her Lord Jesus. The Ivy and Roxcoe families are grateful to the Heavenly Father for gracing the earth with this woman who lived vibrantly, loved fiercely, and laughed joyously. She was an example of God's grace as her kind heart and bright smile shared the story of her love for Jesus with all those she met. She loved her family wholeheartedly. Karen was a strong, resilient, and truly happy woman who faced each day with confidence and hope, never allowing her circumstances to bring despair, but always looking for ways to brighten the lives of others. She looked forward to the day of meeting her Savior and being reunited with her husband. She was loved and adored by her family and friends. She is preceded in death by her father, Norman Hicks, of Jal, New Mexico, and her husband, Doc Ivy, of Midland. She is survived by her mother, Margaret Hicks, of Jal, New Mexico, her daughter and son-in-law, Trina Ivy, and Jim Roxcoe, of Nakuru, Kenya, son and daughter-in-law, Keenan and Karen Ivy of Tarzan, and grandchildren, Will Ivy of Tarzan, Julia and Josie Roxcoe of Nakuru, Kenya, Ethan and Casey Roxcoe Andrews of Orlando, Florida, and Jeffrey Roxcoe of Atlanta, Georgia. She is also survived by her brother and sister-in-law, Bob and Susie Hicks of Rye, Colorado, and sister and brother-in-law Janet and James Ellis of Mansfield, Texas, as well as many beloved in-laws, extended family members, and numerous close family friends. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to His Cherished Ones International Ministry with designation to Karen Ivy of NANA. Gifts can be given online at http://secure-web.cisco.com or mail to HCO Kenya 2822 Durant, Midland, Texas 79705. Due to the current situation, no service or memorial will be held at this time, but the family will host a celebration of Karen's life in remembrance at a later time. Patricia Dennis Paxton Larson. It is with enormous sorrow that we announce the passing of our mother, Patricia Dennis Paxton Larson, on April 8, 2020. Pat was born in Enid, Oklahoma, on March 9, 1938, to George Wesley Dennis and Marie Gallen Dennis. She was an only child and adored being a part of her parents' flower shop, Oklahoma Floral. After graduating from Enid High School, she attended the University of Oklahoma, graduating in 1959 with a BA in journalism. It was at the university where Pat joined Chi Omega Fraternity, which was the seed of a lifetime of friendships. Pat met Bob Schwartz at the University of Oklahoma, and they were married in 1959 and moved to Boston so her husband could complete graduate studies. They had two children, whom she is survived by, John Schwartz and Elizabeth Schwartz Sample, and her children, Robert Mitchell Giles, Grace Marie Giles, Hannah Elizabeth Giles, and Catherine Greer Giles. After a whirlwind of oil and gas company moves, the family settled in Midland, Texas in 1976. In 1979, Pat would begin her real estate career with Langston Realtors, later Coldwell Banker. Over the years, she received numerous awards in real estate, served as president of the Midland Association of Realtors in 1992, and became a member of Coldwell Banker's International President's Circle in 2011. She loved selling homes, making new friends, and sharing her knowledge with her dear assistants and partners. In 1981, she married Bob Paxton and enjoyed 10 wonderful years of marriage before his passing. She shared the love of his two daughters, Mary Paxton Kurth and her husband James, and Shelley Paxton Crampton and her husband Steve, and many grandchildren that followed. Bob introduced her to politics and the West Texas Jazz Society. During these years, Pat was involved with the United Way, Habitat for Humanity, and they were members of First Presbyterian Church. Pat was active in community Bible study, serving as a core leader and a beautiful witness to God's love. Her association with Chi Omega Sisters brought her infinite joy. She served in many leadership positions, including president, in 2003 through 2004. She was recognized nationally by the Chi Omegas, receiving the Joe Bell Holcomb Panhellenic Award. She knew every Chi O song and with flawless delivery could recite the symphony. She and her daughter Elizabeth, also a Chi O from the University of Oklahoma, recently served together on the Building Campaign Board, raising over $1 million for the renovation of the chapter house. In 1995, she married Ron Larson, who passed away April 22, 2019. Her family expanded again to include two more stepchildren, Roshana Larson Sloan and husband Chris, and John Larson and wife Marilyn, and another addition of wonderful grandchildren. She and Ron loved square dancing and were beautiful ballroom dancers. After 35 amazing years in real estate, Pat retired, and she and Ron moved to Houston to be close to her two children. Ron and Pat joined Memorial Presbyterian Church, where she found her new calling in ministry, knitting prayer shawls with a weekly group of friends. Pat was compassionate, thoughtful, a gifted writer that she put to use sending cards and notes of encouragement, prayers and praise to family, friends, and colleagues. We remember her as an amazing, unconditionally loving mother, loyal friend, and faithful daughter of Christ. Her tradition was always to call on Easter morning and exclaim, "He has risen!" We won't hear her earthly voice this year, but we know for sure she is dancing in heaven. Through her spirit, we are forever blessed. No funeral services have been made at this time. Donations can be made in her honor to the Wounded Warrior Project or Foster Feet, P.O. Box 262, Enid, Oklahoma, 73702. Thomasine Witt Payne. Thomasine Payne of Addison, Texas, passed away on March 12, 2020, after a long battle with cancer. She was born in Weatherford, Texas, on October 14, 1942, the daughter of Mildred and Keith Witt. Thomasine grew up and attended school in Gorman, Texas. She obtained a BA degree from the University of Texas in 1967 and taught at the Texas School for the Deaf, Austin, Texas, through 1977. She entered East Texas State University in 1977, where she obtained her master's and doctorate degrees in counseling in 1981. After obtaining such degrees, Thomasine moved to Dallas to work in the Dallas Independent School District, first as a special education teacher at Carter High School, and then as a counselor at Mount Auburn Elementary and John B. Hood Middle School. At Carter High School, she met her future husband, track coach Eddie Payne. Thomasine and Eddie were dedicated to and loved their careers, cats, her dog Billy, gardening, and traveling, especially to Las Vegas to visit their dear friends, Mary Dale and David Sanchez. They lived life to the fullest until Eddie died of cancer in 2006. Thomasine brought joy to all around her, especially to Eddie, her brother, and his wife, and her devoted friends, Mary Dale Sanchez of Las Vegas, Nevada, Susie Fagg of Addison, Texas, and Gail Kirkham of Dallas, Texas. A special note of gratitude and appreciation is extended to Debbie Aliga, her caregiver since fall 2018. Thomasine is survived by her brother, Robert K. Witt, his wife Joan Witt of Midland, Texas, and their children and grandchildren, numerous cousins, including John Witt and his wife Martha Jo of Gonzales, Texas, Marilyn Shell and husband Dan of Portland, Maine, and John Shell of Stephenville, Texas, and her sister-in-law, Tommy Nell Flagel of Norman, Oklahoma. A memorial service will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be sent to SPCA of North Texas, 2400 Lone Star Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75212. Death Notices. John D. Schoon. John D. Schoon, 64, of Midland, passed away April 9, 2020. Viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, April 18, 2020, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. A memorial service will be scheduled at a later date due to current gathering restrictions. Survivors include wife, Christina Schoon, children, John and Emily, parents, Ann and Willard Schoon, and two siblings.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, April 12th, 2020. Section A. EOC staff focus on stopping spread by Michael Merlo. They are detectives of sorts, but these detectives don't look for criminals. Their job is to help trace the origins of where those who are positive for COVID-19 in Ector County got the infectious virus that is sweeping the nation. They also seek to warn those who have been in contact with confirmed positive cases that they may need to self-quarantine or come in for a test. Margaret Gonzalez is the lead investigator for the Ector County Health Department's Emergency Operations Center, EOC. As soon as she gets into the office, she checks the EOC email to see if they've had any positive cases come in since the day before. Those cases could come from Odessa Regional Medical Center, Medical Center Hospital, or any of the 45 private testing providers, she said. Gonzalez said that one of the four case investigators will collect data on positive cases. The case investigator's job is not only to get the data on the confirmed case, but also anybody who may have been exposed to the confirmed case, she said. Case investigators, Gonzalez said, gather work contacts, household contacts, and non-household contacts, and then make a list out of that data of those who need to be contacted because of exposure. Usually, she said, they ask the confirmed case to email a list of the contacts they've had up to 3 to 5 days prior to showing symptoms. Also in the email, we like possible dates of exposure with those contacts and, of course, contact information, she said. After creating a list, they create a summary of those exposed people to give to contact tracers. There are a total of 14 contact tracers, she said. 8 are health department staff and 6 are county staff members. Those contact tracers are tasked with calling each individual potentially exposed and then they relay that information back to an investigator who then reviews the data, and then that data is entered into a database to centralize and archive that information. Currently, that information is only viewed by our staff, Health Department Director Brandy Garcia said. She said that with the one case, they've had as little as 17 contacts, but the longest contact list they've gathered from one case was 90 people. Garcia said it took over a week. It's just a web, she said. It keeps on expanding. Garcia said that they have cross-trained most of their staff to be contact tracers and are currently training UTPB students to contact trace. Our hope is to eventually get a drive-through clinic going, and so that's why we're trying to train as many people we can to do tracing, because once we know when we do that and our numbers are changing so much, then we're going to have more tracing. Garcia said that the clinic would still have to meet CDC guidelines and that they are training only 5 people at a time to keep distance. She said that the problem with testing those who are asymptomatic is that they can result in a false negative. The investigation center is full of people wearing masks while working, but Garcia said she is balancing volunteers with the room they currently have at the Southside Senior Center. County Commissioner Dale Childers said that they have trained volunteers who have later felt uncomfortable with the task of cold calling people and asking them personal information. Garcia said that those who are tracing make a connection with the people they have to call, and if someone in a household with a positive case needs groceries, they offer them resources to stay at home rather than go out and possibly expose someone. Garcia said that if someone is positive, they have to go 7 days plus 3 consecutive days after that with no symptoms, and then we consider them recovered, she said. Once they recover, a lot of those people need releases to go back to work. She said those people need to contact their physician to get a release, and that the CDC recommends that those people have to get 2 consecutive negatives before returning to work. Ector County Health Department epidemiologist Amrinder Chahal said that people need to be following CDC guidelines on social distancing, but that social distancing is not going to work unless we separate positives from the negatives to limit the spread. So that's our job here. He said the job is to quickly identify people who tested positive, isolate them from the rest of the population, and make sure to follow up with those people when they recover. Chahal's job is to keep track of the numbers, he said. How many contacts we have had with these confirmed cases, any notification of a positive case that comes to us, we assign those cases to our staff. He monitors all the investigators and the tracers. Garcia said that the tracers have reached out to over 500 people from the positive cases investigated in Ector County. Each day, they have doctors come in to look at each case individually, checking on the exposure dates, onset dates, symptoms of patients, when they exposed others. Those doctors then recommend tests depending on the data and isolation for others, Garcia said. Hope and peace. Church is different. Goal is the same. By Michael Bauer. The Easter setting is different, but the message remains the same. While COVID-19 is disrupting lives around the globe, churches have had to adapt and change the way they deliver their message to congregations. Most have had to do services virtually through Facebook Live, and that will be the same case on Easter this year. Easter may usually be a time of hope and praying, and even with the coronavirus, that message won't change this year, church leaders from around Odessa detail. It's always the same, Becky Hand, pastor of Life and Grace Lutheran Church, said, "Jesus has risen and is the source of our hope and peace. We need that more now than ever. We'll stick with that. The risen Lord is the basis of our faith, and because he is resurrected, we too will be resurrected, and we have nothing to fear, not even death itself. That's primarily where we'll go with that." For Father Ricardo Lopez, chaplain of St. John's Episcopal School and pastor for St. John's Episcopal Church, his message this year is that Christians are a people of hope in life. He also added that Easter this year, to a certain degree, will also be that moment when everyone can once again embrace each other and be with those who had to be physically distant from each other. Easter will not just be a Sunday, but extended until that moment when we're finally able to be with those friends, families, and loved ones that we've had to be physically distant from, Lopez said. Like many other churches, Life in Grace Lutheran, St. John's Episcopal, and St. Andrew Cumberland Presbyterian have been doing their services through Facebook Live amid the virus forcing social distancing. While this year's message on Easter might be similar to previous years, it's been a challenge for area congregations to navigate through Holy Week this year. "It's been complicated," Lopez said. "How do you wash people's feet from Facebook Live?" Lopez said it has really forced not just himself but other people to reconsider what it means to be a church and what it looks like to be a people of faith today. "For myself, I talk about the washing of the feet, but one of the things that I've been reflecting on that I hope to preach on a little this Thursday is at this moment, our physical distance is an act of love, just like the washing of the feet was an act of love," Lopez said. "It was awkward and it was weird, but it's what we are being told to do. In love, we stay away from each other for your sake or my sake or whatever it may be. This whole COVID-19 has challenged us to reevaluate, to approach our people and what that looks like." For Hand, it's been a different Holy Week than in the past, but like with everyone else, her congregation has managed to adapt, and it didn't keep them from celebrating Palm Sunday last week. "We started out with Palm Sunday, where we decorated our doors with palms," Hand said. "We had palms available at church, and people came by to pick them up. We had a parade of palms on people's doors and had photos of that on Facebook. We'll do the same with Easter. We'll decorate our doors and post those on the group Facebook page. Of course, we'll have a challenge on Maundy Thursday because that's the institution of the Lord's Supper, and we always celebrate the Lord's Supper. We couldn't do that this year, so we focused on the foot washing, the humility of Christ, and we saw that again on Good Friday." How churches have been getting the message across to their members may be different now than it was 2 months ago, but St. Andrew's Cumberland Presbyterian Church pastor Larry Hood says the goal of the church is still the same. "We look at what we have available, and we're still a church," Hood said. "We still have the opportunity to connect with people. It means that it's not just about the pastor and his staff anymore. Each one of us, we need to see each of us is in this." For Hood, his goal of bringing hope, dignity, and encouragement remains crucial now, even in the face of a pandemic. "We still have that responsibility to give people a place, and while we may not be in a building, we're still us," he said. "I'm probably doing more ministry work now through Facebook calls and text messages than even before." Hood will be able to deliver his Easter message this year at a sunrise service that his church will be doing at 7:30 a.m. at Calvary Cross along Highway 191. The service at the cross is open to the public and will be conducted in accordance with social distancing guidelines. All attendees will remain inside their vehicles and can listen to the service from 96.1 FM. It was one of our church members who came up with the idea and said that we couldn't do it. Hood said, "I think it's a super idea. It keeps people safe. It keeps them protected. We still get to keep hold of our traditions." But even with a low-key Easter this year, Hand says the strength of God's word hasn't changed. "We rely on the power of God's word and the promise of his word," she said. "So as long as we have the word and the promise of our baptism, we can roll that." Sheriff sees influx of jailer applicants during downturn, by Royal McGregor. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths is in a unique situation. Coupled with the steep oil downturn and job loss due to the coronavirus, the Ector County Law Enforcement Center has received 40 applications for jailers. Griffiths said that's well above what he's seen during an oil downturn, but he explained the Permian Basin hasn't experienced a downturn like this since 2016. The price of WTI crude dropped by more than $40 a barrel during the last 3 months. "In previous slowdowns, I haven't seen this large of influx of applicants," Griffiths said. "This one is hurting the oil business a lot worse than what we've seen in the past. It's amazing for me to see all of these applications." He said the two newest jailers previously worked in the private sector. The price of crude oil was $63.27 on January 6th, and it dropped to $22.76 as of Thursday. InflationDate.com detailed the annual average crude oil price for 2016 was $36.34. The coronavirus has affected all non-essential businesses. There's a wide array of jobs, of different job skills that we are going to incorporate into a jailer, Griffiths said. He explained if he hired all 40 applicants, he would probably be able to bring back all the inmates who are housed in other jails across Texas. Griffiths said as of Tuesday afternoon, there are 175 inmates housed in 8 counties that cost the county $7,702 per day. Those inmates who are in other jails across Texas would be housed in the jail's new expansion. Griffiths said there is a small percentage of the cells in the new expansion that are being utilized. The jail can hold up to 667 inmates, and the expansion added 412 beds. "If we can get half of them hired, we can bring back a lot of inmates," Griffiths said. "We are hopeful. I would like to say that I could hire every single one of them, but there may be underlying reasons why we can't hire some of them." Though the sheriff has an abundance of applicants, Griffiths explained the hiring process takes time. He said applicants have to go through multiple tests that include mental and physical evaluations. ECSO is able to conduct person-to-person interviews in a conference that would allow the applicant and staff to stay 6 feet apart. Griffiths said, "If an applicant is hired, they have to give fingerprints, take a drug test, and tuberculosis test. There are some state requirements that have to be met for us to even consider them. They have to pass a TSI test, which is a reading comprehension test. Everyone has to have a psychological exam. They have to have a physical. It's kind of a long process." COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County confirmed cases 41. Ector County negative 317 out of 462 tested, with 115 pending. One death. Midland County 31 confirmed out of 771 tested. One death. Texas 12,561 confirmed, with 120,533, with 120,533 tested. Total Texas deaths, 254. U.S. cases, 492,416 total confirmed and 18,559 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Teen dead in Odessa. One 17-year-old is dead and another is charged with murder following a Friday shooting in Odessa. Chavia Dwayne Crosby, 17, was charged with murder, a first-degree felony, and tampering with physical evidence, a third-degree felony. The fatal shooting happened just after 7 p.m. Friday at the Sedona Springs apartment complex located on the 900 block of West University. An Odessa police officer reported that he was responding to a medical call at the complex and found a female dead inside the apartment complex, a press release detailed. The victim was identified as 17-year-old Jasmine Lozano. An investigation showed that Crosby got into an argument with Lozano, fled the scene before officers arrived, and disposed of the firearm used in the shooting, a press release detailed. Crosby was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had not posted bond and was still in custody as of Saturday afternoon, jail records show. Jail records also show that Crosby was arrested and charged with aggravated robbery on February 8th and posted a $50,000 bond February 10th. Obituaries for Sunday, April 12th. Carol N. Jack Fletcher. Carol N. Jack Fletcher, 73, passed away Saturday, March 28th in Odessa. He was born December 8th, 1946 in Andalusia, Alabama, to the late Bobby Jean Kimbrough Thompson and Carol Nolan Fletcher Sr. Jack married Suzanne Smisek in 1975 in Orlando, Florida. Jack is survived by his wife, Suzanne Fletcher of Odessa, son Andrew Fletcher of Jal, New Mexico, daughter Stacy Fletcher of Rockford, Michigan, and brother Sidney Allen Eunice of Melbourne, Florida. Memorial services will be scheduled at a later date. Jason Robert Sloan. Jason Robert Sloan, 49, of Odessa, passed away suddenly Thursday, April 9th. He was born Sunday, January 3rd, 1971, to Lana Clark Sloan and the late Henry Lee Sloan. Surviving him are his wife, Sherry Nichols Sloan, his mother, Lana Sloan, son, Dustin Baskett, daughter, Tori Baskett, mother and father-in-law, Peggy and James Luker, and numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. He is preceded in death by his father, Henry Sloan, a sister, Amy Sloan, and his grandparents. Visitation at the funeral home will begin Sunday, April 12th at 9 a.m. and continue through to noon on Tuesday. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Tuesday, April 14th at Acres West Funeral Chapel Crematory, with Pastor Billy Carruth officiating. Interment will follow at Odessa 2 Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death Notice. Brett Adrian Godfrey. Brett Adrian Godfrey, 37, of Odessa, died Tuesday, April 7th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Jacqueline Biggers Stars. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Aries and a moon in Capricorn. Happy birthday for Monday, April 13, 2020. Iconoclastic and outspoken, this year you will want to contribute and achieve. You think of brilliant ideas to help everybody and receive praise. There will be delicate situations existing among professional associates, however. Be cautious. Relatives might need some financial assistance. If single, romantic involvements will be especially exciting, possibly changing your entire life. If attached, there's a deep sense of connectedness if you listen more to your partner. Virgo speaks sensibly and practically. Aries, March 20 through April 19. 5 stars. Always the pioneer. You will lead discussions today and win debates using clever repartee. A great capacity for problem solving is in evidence. This promises a variety of important calls and emails. Confirm appointments. Tonight, write down a list of your goals. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 3 stars. Do not let persistence and permanence become bullish in flexibility and stubbornness. It is important to recognize when change is needed and to adapt if you are to reach your ultimate potential. You can get what you want. Tonight, dream of faraway lands. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 4 stars. Alert and versatile, life for you is always active on a variety of levels at the same time. Today, much is learned and accomplished through the medium of conversation. Disputes with a partner can be resolved through your own form of mediation. Tonight, early bedtime. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 3 stars. There might be some unvoiced anxiety and frustration to deal with today. Lean on partners for support. Learn from disappointments and delays, then plod ahead patiently. No one is a better survivor than you. Tonight, an intimate dinner with the one you love. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 3 stars. The idea of being your own best friend in developing a healthy lifestyle must be embraced. Pay heed to an inner voice warning of danger. Seafood, including seaweed and sea salt, has multiple trace minerals that would be especially healing today. Tonight, clear your desk. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 5 stars. Today, artwork and imported items of all types will bring you pleasure. Be cheerful when you reconnect, reconsider, and reflect. Be proactive. A cycle of great blessings and opportunity unfolds when you think hard enough. Tonight, make a lovely dinner for a few special souls. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 4 stars. It can be a little difficult to concentrate today. Follow a schedule combined with positive affirmations. Your adherence to this will bring a high energy level and a new sense of optimism develops. Study will be favorable. Tonight, organize your home. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 4 stars. Others have a different view about love. Communicate. You will prevail if you respect the perspectives of those with whom you are intimate. There is much exploring and probing in progress today. Do not stay silent. Tonight, catch up with a sibling or an old pal. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. Forever galloping onward, you approach life as a great adventure. You can be intolerant of the mundane, but today you must go over your finances and accounts. It is a great time to get them in order and brainstorm about new money-making opportunities. Tonight, relax. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 5 stars. Penetrating yet cautious, a flair for business and a yearning for practical achievement motivate you. The urge to get started on important work burns within you as you wake up today. This is your day, so make the most of it. Tonight, celebrate yourself. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. You are concerned with large metaphysical issues today. The direction society is taking and advocating needed changes are important to you. You experience a pure impulse of dynamic creation and are inspired to come up with innovative ideas. Tonight, very sweet dreams. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. Dreamy you is linked to compassion, sacrifice, and illusions. Today, there is a strong introspective kindness present. A family member can be a trifle volatile. Use your natural skills to create harmony amongst all of us. Tonight, call professional colleagues and catch up. Born today, President Thomas Jefferson, 1743, writer Samuel Beckett, 1906, activist Amy Goodman, 1957.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.